You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Everyone, welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That's the Hall of Famer Chris Carter. This is Nick Wright. A lot of news on a Tuesday morning. Antonio Brown tweeted about a trade. Carson Wentz is finally coming back into action, but we start in New England where the Patriots just added Josh Gordon. The embattled wide receiver who was given multiple chances by the Browns as he dealt with substance abuse issues is a Brown no longer. The Patriots traded for him yesterday in exchange for a fifth-round pick. Gordon has played just six games since the 2014 season, scoring only two touchdowns. And according to reports, he is available to play for New England Sunday against the Lions. All right, CC, how much better can Josh Gordon make this Patriots team?
Well, right now, they don't have a guy that I would consider definitely not a number one. That's excluding Gronk, all right? And Cordell Patterson, Philip Dorsett, and Chris Hogan. They don't have a number one guy. They don't have a guy that's a good number two. They have guys that are either three, fours, or fives and are special teams players. So you say, will Josh add to this when you add him to the room? Yes, he's more talented than those guys. But those guys do know the playbook, and this is what we have to make sure that no one churns their roster like New England, and there's no guarantee that Josh is going to make a contribution for New England. Now, do they get more talented in the room? Yes, but this is their 28th wide receiver transaction since the month of March. So they have been looking all around. They've looked at a number of veterans, Kenny Britt, Decker. Those guys had an opportunity. They weren't able to practice. They were injured, and a number of other reasons why they're not on the roster. So, yes, he makes them more talented. But I think what you said is key. He's played six games since 2014. Everyone is in love with fantasy football. Everyone's in love with the 2013 season.
And really four games of the 2013 season. Like yeah. That month that he was the record-breaking month. It's we can drill it down to what everyone in their mind's eye Josh Gordon is. Sorry to interrupt.
Yeah, so it to think that he's going to ever perform like that, I just think is unrealistic. Josh, this is not something that's new. Like, he's been dealing with issues since he was a kid. So for me to think that now he's in New England and all that's going to go away? No, there's more pressure in New England every day. So looking at Josh, Josh has struggled in Cleveland. He struggled at a couple different colleges. He struggled in high school. Like, he talked about openly, he admitted that he experimented with Xanax and everything when he was as young as 13 years old. Like, this is the behavior of an addict. Now, I went on TV a number of years ago on another station and said Josh Gordon was an addict. Josh lashed out at me. Chris doesn't know what he's talking about. He doesn't care anything about me. But I think the last 4 years have proved out that, and I don't want to be right, but I know the behavior. I've seen the behavior. I think this is a big, big week for him. And I'll just identify with this. September 21st, 1990. That's my sobriety date. That's when I decided on a Friday that I was going to give up drinking. And I decided to turn my life around and that I wanted better things for myself. That's 2 days from this Friday, 28 years. So 14,722,000 minutes that I've had to live with my addiction. You know when it's going to be over with?
When you die.
When I die. And that's the reality. And everyone's all excited. Oh, he's going to do this. He's going to do his old Belichick. Belichick and them don't deal with addiction. They're not going to give them any additional help. They don't believe in babysitting. They'll give them an opportunity, and that's to show up to work, and the other guys there are going to show up to work, and everyone there is bought in. Now, what's going to happen to Josh? I don't want to predict that, all right? Because it's just not fair. But I've been around addiction too long, and I don't like what's happening. There's a reason why he's in New England.
I can't remember a story that the general public's reaction to was so different than what my gut reaction was. The general public, I reading Twitter yesterday, they're talking about Moss in 07. Everybody, even with the two bad years in Oakland, the 5 years leading up to the Pats getting Randy Moss, he had 48 touchdowns and 5,300 yards receiving and had played 74 football games. The 5 years leading up to this moment for Josh Gordon, he has two touchdowns, 630 yards receiving, has played 11 games. The idea that his, what are deep personal demons that take the lives of thousands of Americans every day, that Bill Belichick's going to fix it, if he can fix it, then he's in the wrong business. Then his talents are being wasted as just the greatest football coach ever. He should be in the life coach, personal healer, guru business. I understand the gamble for New England. They say, hey, if it works out, if he does get on the right track, if we can just squeeze 3 weeks of football out of him, it might be worth a fifth round pick. I get it for them. And I do think in the games he plays for the Patriots, he will be an instant impact. Brady will obviously be far and away the best quarterback he's ever seen. We saw in week one, he still has some natural ability. That touchdown catch he made was spectacular. Not just the catch, but getting down to avoid the hit. I think when he steps on the field for New England, he'll be great. But we're all of a sudden going to think Josh Gordon is going to play a full season? In the last 6 weeks, he couldn't show up for work. His first day of work, essentially, training camp, because he needed to go away from the team. And his last 96 hours, he couldn't show up for work on time. And according to Mary Kay Cabot, who covers this team very well, they think he was not himself. Read into that what you will. I root for Josh. Chris, you mentioned you don't want to be right. What you do want is for there to be another Chris Carter. Another guy who could have gone this way. Due to drugs, alcoholism, and would have been a wasted talent, who went this way and is instead a story for everybody. A guy, and I would argue, with no disrespect, like, he has your level of athleticism, your level of ability. Now, he doesn't have the time left that you did when you got sober, but Josh Gordon has the physical tools to be an all-timer. But the idea that he's going to change who he's been, He started his addiction issues, God bless him, when he was 13. He's 27. That's over half his life.
All it takes is one story like Chris Carter's for people to think it's doable. It's possible for a guy to change course.
Sure,
and they can't. It's hard. But just going back to what you guys both said, the reason people make comparisons, rightfully or wrongfully, to guys like Randy Moss is because we only remember the last time we really saw him. And a lot of it is one great catch a couple weeks ago and then a one-month sample size of how he played lights out and incredible. And we seem to think that was the course and that was the direction. But there were 8 to 10 teams who felt that we could take a chance on this guy and maybe he could do something for us, that wanted to give this guy a chance.
Yeah,
and I think that builds
into the
hype.
People in the league are crazy. Like, they're crazy. If they think that this is the problem. Josh has been very, very talented since he was young. But his direction in life, or lack of direction, has never got in sync with the human side of life. Like, he's a great athlete, but he can't get in touch with himself. He doesn't know who he is. When you can't show up to your job on time, on a regular basis, it becomes a problem. So to think that now all of a sudden that this person who's conflicted and has walked in conflict is going to be in unison with the athlete? Like, you guys keep getting, people just get this all mixed up. No, you can't separate the behavior from the athlete. Like, you keep saying he's a great talent. He was a great talent. Who Josh is now, we don't know. He caught one pass in that game.
And the teams that are trading, the NFL is not in it. It's a nice side story if it happens, but they're not in the person saving business. They're in the football winning business.
Oh, yeah.
And so the teams that were trying to trade for him, I do not think they thought he comes here, he's going to get his life on track. I think they thought we maybe get a month out of him. The Seahawks signed a guy who they know is awaiting sentencing, not because they think, oh, this is going to look good to the judge, but he damn near had an interception last night. Could have turned that game. So until they lock him up, we'll squeeze some football out of him. They are not the team that was most invested in Josh Gordon, the human being.
This is important.
Finally tapped out. They finally said, we can't do it anymore. And it truly breaks my heart. But, like, the idea, I just think people have this totally wrong. People are like, oh, New England's still playing chess. Well, everyone's playing Connect Four. Look at what they did. They got their number one receiver. If Josh Gordon wins Comeback Player of the Year, I will be thrilled.
Or if he gets through the whole season, playing every game the rest of the way.
And if he does that, to me, that's Comeback Player of the Year. That would be an amazing story. If he can get through this whole season, not be suspended, not have anything bad happen, not take time away from the team. I got to see some. We haven't seen evidence the last week. He hasn't been consistent for 10 consecutive days.
Yeah. I have no concern about what's going to go on in New England. And the reason why is because, to me, it don't matter. What's Josh going to be doing 20 years from now when ain't nobody calling, ain't nobody tweeting about him? Bill Belichick and the rest of them, what are they doing? Man, they don't care. He did leave an organization that really did care and put a lot of resources around him. I've talked to a lot of those people. I know the things that they had in place. The reason why Josh is available to be for these 8 to 10 teams and New England was because he breached his word that he had with that general manager. That's what happened there. That's the reason why. No one gets released or traded for a bad hamstring. No, but when you lie to people and you present yourself as something else after not second chance, they've given him 15 chances. All right? So thinking that Bill Belichick is a lifesaver, no. He's teaching football and teaching reality. But Bill Belichick, as a young coach, though, he did have a great player that played with him that he didn't have an impact on, and that was Lawrence Taylor. He was a defensive coordinator for a lot of his career. And he didn't have no, because he's not into relationships. He's not into what you're feeling like and who you are as a person. That's right. Not what Belichick does.
Right.
This is a paper transaction, and they have the guy there. This is their 28th transaction as far as wide receiver. They're trying to get their wide receiver position a little bit better. And if they can get him, Josh, under contract for basically for the next 2 years for $2 million, it's a great deal for New England. But to think that they care anything about the person, no, they're not in the person caring business.
Now, the one person who did, which was John Dorsey, finally said, we've had enough. We're going to let this go, and we're going to walk away from it. All right, plenty more on Josh Gordon later in the show. But coming up, will the return of Carson Wentz cure all Eagles' problems? Next on First Things First. We will get to Carson Wentz and his return to the Eagles in a minute, but first, Russell Wilson with a 19-yard pass to Tyler Lockett for a touchdown last night's Thursday night football game.
That was, I mean, another perfectly placed ball. That was great coverage. I thought it was, you couldn't be any closer, and Russell just dropped it in the bucket on him. It was perfect.
That's a tight throw. That's throwing it to the back pylon, right over the DB's shoulder. Good catch, too. And it's hard to throw to small guys in the back of the end zone because the quarterback was also small. He couldn't see that guy.
Excuse me. Much more on that game. Oh. Georgia high school football. North Gwinnett quarterback Junior Martin puts the ball behind his back, eludes a defender, fires a 38-yarder to Garrison Manor.
They play good football in Gwinnett County there in Georgia now. Produce a lot of good high school players, a bunch of college players, and some pros.
So good it'll take your breath away, huh, Jenna?
Clearly. Clearly.
Behind the back. That's a hell of a play, man. That's great. And a perfect throw afterwards. Come on, corner. You had enough time to get back there. Quarterback's doing dipsy-doos.
Finally in Virginia, Justin Good from Henrico High School breaking two defenders down.
Okay. You can get some. You can get some again. You can take out your teammate, I'll truck stick you. The ref got in the way of the camera there. He broke this guy down twice, see?
What were your exact words? You can get some, and
you can get some of that truck stick.
I got to write that down. On to the Eagles now. After falling to the Bucs on Sunday, they made the much-anticipated announcement on Monday. No correlation. Carson Wentz will finally make his season debut. He will start this Sunday against the Colts. Adjust your expectations accordingly. It will be the first game Wentz has played since injuring his knee in Week 14 last season. Doug Peterson says when it comes to Carson, he's not holding back.
In my mind, you know, and we all felt the same way, that he's cleared, and there's no need to hold back. Now, we're still going to have conversations, no different when he was healthy. We're still going to have conversations about protecting yourself, as we do with all the quarterbacks, and, you know, making sure we do the right things there. But there's no limitations. Thing is, I'm not going to coach scared. I'm not going to coach paranoid. I'm not going to go in thinking, oh, no, we can't do this, we can't do that. We just have to continue to go play, and I got to coach that way. You know, I'm excited to get him back out there, but, you know, at the same time, it's not about one guy, and we can't lose sight of that. You know, we got other issues, you know, offensively, defensively, and special teams that we need to coach up, and as exciting it is to have him back, your starting quarterback, we still have some other areas to fix.
All right, Nick, Coach says it's not about one guy, but Eagles fans are left watching what they saw from Nick Foles the last two games, and they're thinking, oh, Carson Wentz will now fix all of our problems. Is that the case?
Well, I mean, he's not playing corner, so he's not going to fix all their problems, but he's going to drastically upgrade their quarterback position. I mean, that is, even if he is just first game back 75% of what he was last year, that is a drastic upgrade over to what you have come to expect from Nick Foles, even when you bake in what he did in the NFC Championship game in the Super Bowl. Week one, which they actually won, Foles was awful. Week two, Foles wasn't terrible, but the defense was, and they lost that game. Foles actually was pretty good in week two. It was his best game, I'd say his third best game as a starter after the NFC Championship game in the Super Bowl. What the Eagles' issues right now are, they are not creating enough big plays through the air. Wentz should help that, but the wide receiver injuries are going to continue to hurt that, and they are allowing too many big plays through the air. Wentz obviously will have no impact on that, but given who they have after this week, Tennessee, Minnesota, Giants, Carolina, Jacksonville, I think it's really good that Carson gets his feet wet against what I consider a less than average defense in Indianapolis. Get back there, get a home game under your belt before you have to go on the road. So the timeline on this is good, but the Eagles' primary issue right now is not quarterback play. To me, it's secondary play, and so that issue will remain.
I think if they want to have an answer long-term for their problems, is they need to get back to playing a physical style of football, all right? We know that they have the receiver injuries. You can't make that as an excuse, because last year they had injuries all over the roster and they still won the Super Bowl, including the most important position as quarterback.
Sure.
So when you have that on your resume, you can't come back this year. It's like Aaron Rodgers when they won the Super Bowl. Half his roster and everything, a bunch of starters and everything missing. But the next year they came back, people don't want to hear that because they've already been able to overcome it. Most of their injuries are at wide receiver. So when you look at who they have, Kamar Aiken, Nelson Aguilar, Shelton Gibson, DeAndre Carter. No, he's not my cousin either. All right? Like, they don't
have. Are you
sure? Yeah, I'm sure. Okay. They don't have a whole bunch of weapons even when Carson's coming back. So let's put it on what they have the best in football, the best offensive line and the best defensive line. Because if the defensive line starts getting after the quarterback, you can play a little more coverage and help out that secondary. But let's bring the attitude back to that offense. When Carson is in the game, they rush for 40 more yards than when Nick Foles is in the game. And if they can rush for those extra yards, then it brings back the RPOs. People say, well, is he going to run the ball in RPOs? It's a sound pass protection. And, yes, he's got to be able to run the ball a few times to be able to keep the defense honest. That is the way that Philadelphia is able to cure their problems until they get some of these wide receivers back.
So that you bring up a good point that Doug Peterson actually mentioned, and I think a lot of Eagles fans are wondering if we're going to see the same Carson Wentz, if he's going to go out there and be able to run and they're going to let him play the same game. Coach said he's not going to change the way he coaches him at all. It's going to be the exact same game plan. What does he mean by that?
He said he's going to call the same exact game plan. He's coached Carson up as far as his overall health. Coaches tell their starting quarterbacks how important they are, and when you get in arm's way, we need you to be safe with the football. That doesn't change because Carson's in his third year. That doesn't change because he's got some knee injuries. I mean, if you look at the league, 20% of the guys got knee injuries. Coach, you can't go out and babysit them. No, you have to be able to play within your injuries and your limitations. So he will still be athletic. Carson wasn't Let's not try to create that he was Michael Vick. No, he's an athletic quarterback who plays in the pocket. All right? When he ran with the football with the Rams, any quarterback would have gotten hurt if they got sandwiched between those two defenders. But he is a good, good athlete, and he's got to be able to use his athleticism. That's one of the things that makes him different, and that's something that I'll be watching for.
And we've talked a lot about how there's a long history in this league for teams that aren't the New England Patriots to make the Super Bowl and the next year come out a little flat. And that's what I've seen from Philadelphia this year. Now, I think Wentz coming back could be a shot in the arm for them, not just because you have a better quarterback, but as far as a team almost rallying point. Because you can't – they gave up a 75-yard play to start the game against Tampa and then gave up another 75-yard play to a tight end, which was 50 yards, were yards after catch. That, to me, is a team that was not – they as sharp as they were last year, that was not paying attention to detail the way they were last year. You saw them against Atlanta, first game of the year, unveiling of the banner. Atlanta's first drive, all the way downfield to the 1 yard line. And
second
then,
drive.
Second drive, back down the field. I mean, so you have seen a team that all this talk last year about underdogs, no one believes in us, that really did seem to at least keep them at a level that they have not reached this year. Now, they're 1-1. It's fine. 1-1 without your starting quarterback, you'll take it, even if they feel like they should have won the Tampa game. Now I just want to see. The Eagles haven't looked like the Eagles this year.
No.
At least the Eagles from last year. And we can't say it's because Carson wasn't there, because they looked like the Eagles without Carson. They looked like the Eagles as far as how attacking their defense was, how sharp their coaching was. They have looked like a team that won the Super Bowl and is easing its way into the year after a long year, maybe getting your starting quarterback back for the first time since that Rams game.
Yes.
Will flip the switch for some of these guys.
We shall see. Carson Wentz back with the Eagles now. Coming up, can Khalil Mack lead the Bears to the playoffs? The playoffs next on First Things First. Time for some stories to start your morning.
Yeah, that thumb was nasty.
There's movement. All right, calm down. It wasn't my dad. There's movement in the kicker community. A sentence I've never said before. The Vikings cut Daniel Carlson, and they'll sign Dan Bailey, the former Cowboy. Bailey is the second most accurate kicker in NFL history. Nick, how big of a deal is this for the Vikings?
And I've seen, and Chris obviously has seen, the Vikings have some great seasons come down to some bad kickers. They didn't want that to happen this year. Dan Bailey's excellent. And Dan Bailey has a history of kicking indoors in Dallas. He'll be kicking indoors in Minnesota. I mean, this is a – he had his choice of teams. He picked, I think, the right one, and they made the right call. This is a big addition for the Vikings.
Watch the press conference. They asked Coach Zim yesterday, hey, Coach, was it hard cutting the draft pick and everything?
Carlson.
Was it emotional? He said, did you watch the game?
Yeah.
Simple as that. No. They got to move on. Championship team, you need a championship caliber kicker. They have that now in Bailey.
All right, sticking with the Vikings, the NFL confirmed the officials made the right call on the Clay Matthews roughing the passer penalty. In fact, the NFL is going to use the Clay Matthews penalty as a teaching tool for pass rushers. See? You think the NFL got this right?
I've been around a lot of Mondays and Tuesdays, and the league said, you know something, the guys that we hire and employ and everything, they were right. And the guys weren't necessarily right. If they're going to keep protecting the quarterbacks, yeah, of course this is the right call. If you look at the number of roughing on the quarterback this year at an all-time high in two games in, like, of course they're going to be – they changed the rule. Of course they're going to be right. It wasn't the right call, though.
It wasn't the right call. And it's to me, it's concerning when almost the consensus of former NFL officials who now aren't paid by the NFL, Dean Blandino, Mike Pereira, the guys on other networks, they all say, you got to come on. You got to be kidding me. Your friend Peter King said, if this is roughing the passer, we may have crossed the Rubicon. I get that the NFL wants to protect Tony Carreni and his crew, but I really hope there isn't an actual memo to refs. We want this to be roughing the passer. He put his head to the side. He didn't land on him. If that's roughing the passer, then the playing defense is getting close to impossible.
All right. Our top story of the day, the Patriots trading for Josh Gordon in exchange for a fifth-round pick. Gordon could be available for New England as early as this Sunday. CeCe, any chance he can make an impact that early?
Nick, I told you this. It's hard to flunk middle school, flunk high school, flunk college, and then go to
a PhD program.
and say you're going to be successful. Like, I'm like Tom Brady. Tom Brady said, I hope. I hope he shows up. I hope he's a good teammate. I'm like Tom Brady. I hope.
I think if Josh Gordon plays, and if he plays this Sunday, I think he can instantly make an impact. I do believe that. My concern is not about Josh Gordon's ability on Sundays during the game. My concern is everything leading up to Sunday that might prevent him from playing on Sunday. But if he's on the field for the Patriots this Sunday, oh, I think he'll have multiple catches.
Yeah. If football was so easy, why isn't everybody doing it? The Patriots system is so difficult. How can a guy go from Cleveland and just jump into the Patriots this weekend and make an impact?
I think they would give him very, very specific roles to play.
But why not all the other guys? Why didn't they do that for other guys? Why ain't that work for them?
Because those other guys don't have – listen, I agree with you almost, but those other guys don't have the physical tools Josh Gordon has. Those tools haven't left him. Like he is – I mean, his size, his height, his speed.
New England has never just told one guy what to do. All right? So it would be the first time that they did something like that. So I'd be shocked.
Finally, while as many as 10 teams were interested in trading for Josh Gordon, it is week three, and guess who's still not on a team? Dez Bryant. How about a look is this for Dez Bryant, Nick?
I mean, a quarter to a third of the league wants to give up a pick, even if it's just a – I mean, if the Pats got Josh Gordon for a fifth, then nobody else was offering anything better than a sixth. We know that. So even if it's just minimal compensation, teams are willing to roll the dice and give something up to bring in Josh Gordon. And nobody wants to bring in Dez even for a tryout? Like, we know Cleveland brought him in, passed on him. The Ravens offered him a deal what feels like ages ago at this point. Now, there is a salary difference. Josh is locked into about $800,000 this year and would only make about $1 million next year. That's not where Dez is. But at this point, like, Dez has to recognize that if I've somehow fallen beneath the Browns trading Josh Gordon in the pecking order, where am I in the pecking order? Corey Coleman's had two teams take shots on him, right? Like, you talked about the Patriots. They brought in 28 wide receivers. Dez ain't one of them. I mean, none of this is a good sign for Dez Bryant and his continued NFL employment.
Absent of the day when Dez was going in to supposedly renegotiate with Jerry, either a reduced salary, reduced role in the organization. Nick, on that day, gave him some friendly family
awesome advice,
you know, that he should demand. the market is you would, what did you say?
I said, if you get cut, if the Cowboys cut Dez Bryant, the best wide receiver on the market becomes Dez Bryant. And by the way, just a sidebar, with my budding side business in the agency bit world, you're really killing my future clients by continuing to bring up my one mistake. I give one guy bad advice, and you just bring up on national
TV. A good lawyer would bring up their one mistake compared to letting some other lawyer, the Zuzu,
I should 8 mile myself.
Yes,
okay,
absolutely.
Got it. Go ahead.
The truth
aside
of the matter
from that
is,
day you were saying.
Aside from that first day, yesterday was the worst day that Dez Bryant's had since he's been cut. And it's not just because Josh Gordon. It's not because even to get in the position Josh is in, let me just tell you the reality. Josh would have had to, in his career, flunked at least 15 to 20 drug tests. He's been suspended from the league multiple times. All right, so with that being on the board and someone saying, I'm willing to take my chances with him more so than yourself, that's incriminating information. And then besides that, Michael Floyd, with his troubled past, Arizona gave up on him. Minnesota couldn't use him. New England couldn't use him. He signs with the Washington Redskins. Former bust, Breshad Perriman, Baltimore, from first-round pick. He's in his fifth year. I think it's his fifth year. Yeah. And he signs with Washington the same day. So the two teams that Dez was courting on Twitter, I would look good in New England next to Gronk and everything.
Look good in Washington.
Well, maybe holding a clipboard.
Right.
I look good in Washington. They signed other receivers.
And
I'm not trying to say those things about Josh to make him look bad. That's just the reality. For all these people out here with hope and everything, that's the reality. That's the person that they're getting. And New England wanted that poor person in their locker room more so than they wanted Dez Bryant.
Wanted that person in their locker room, to speak to your point about your skepticism about him being able to help this week, wanted that person in their locker room getting there on a Monday night or Tuesday morning.
Making him available.
With the game that Sunday. They could have had Dez for all of training camp, mini camp, preseason, everything. Like, that's the other part of this. That the Pats believe that there's a chance, and they had to give up a draft pick to take the chance, that Josh Gordon has, demons aside, the football acumen to be able to pick up whatever they're teaching there at some point this year to make him valuable. They didn't think Dez could do it if they picked him up 4 months ago. Washington didn't. Like, the league has clearly, how many? I got depth charts in front of me.
Has clearly what? Given up on Dez Bryant?
The league has made their opinion clear on who Dez is and what his value is. I just have a rant. We're going to talk about the Seahawks in a minute, so I have depth chart in front of me. They got a wide receiver named Keenan Reynolds. They brought in Brandon Marshall, who seems to be on his last legs. David Moore, a seventh-round pick from a year ago, he's on their depth chart. Like, how many teams? The Chicago Bears. How's Josh Bellamy and Javon Wims? Like,
there's got to be more to this Dez Bryant story that we don't. That we don't know, or that the public doesn't.
Well,
know. It can't all be because he's got a bad attitude.
Well, this is
the game.
This is what the league said, regardless of what we think, regardless of what intel we have. They feel the same way about Dez. They feel about Kaepernick and Eric Reed. They ain't bringing them in for some reason, and it ain't got to do with football. We know, right, Eric Reed and why Cap aren't there, but Dez Bryant, what's his excuse? But they're saying the same thing about both of them. I mean, both of these groups.
Right.
So to me, I'd be shocked. Philadelphia, they don't have a wide receiver. He's played against them twice a year. You would think that he's got enough good players playing against them that they might bring him in, and they're not bringing him in. So
the one thing Eric Reed and Cap don't have that Dez does is that one Ravens offer that he turned down. Those guys haven't even had a chance to turn down an offer. But since then, it's the exact same thing. For some reason or another, the league says you're not either good enough or we don't want you here.
Take Skip up on his offer.
Yeah, Dez Skip up on his offer.
All right.
He's the only person offering you a job right now.
Monday Night Football featured the Bears and Seahawks. Bears defense was the story in this one. Khalil Mack had one of Chicago's six sacks on Russell Wilson, who couldn't stay upright at all. And Prince Amukamara took a pick to the house. 24-17, Chicago won it. Seattle now 0-2 on the year. Here's Russell Wilson after the loss.
Even on our successful, you know, some of our best years, it didn't always look great at the beginning, but it's how you finish and how we can turn it around and just play the next game, you know, and we get to go back home and play in Seattle, and we're going to need the 12 a lot, and we're going to need that feeling, and just, you know, winning is a habit, you know, and you got to get that feeling, you know, and once you get the first one, it kind of hopefully rolls from there, and so, you know, we're doing the right things in terms of how we're preparing, and I'll bet on the guys that we have, you know, any time of the day.
All right, CeCe, what do you think went wrong for the Seahawks last night?
I think Russell Wilson is one of the most positive guys you ever want to see, but this is the least talented Seahawks team since he's been on the roster. Since he took over and they named him the star, it's just the least talent. And this game is about talent. And you could see that last night with the lack of you being familiar with who was on the team. But that being defensively, linebackers that you hadn't heard of. A guy that got in
Michael Kendricks almost made their big play, almost made a pick on the sideline.
Yeah, he was one of their most valuable, and they just got him on the team to play linebacker.
On work release.
Yeah, he's potentially facing 25 years. Like, this is not a team that's real explosive. They don't have any identity offensively besides Russell running for his life, but he's been able to do that. But they had Jimmy Graham. They had Doug Baldwin. Jimmy Graham gone to Green Bay playing football there. Doug Baldwin hurt. And they miss Doug Baldwin from an offensive standpoint.
Sure do.
He is their number one guy. He's one of the most reliable receivers in the National Football League, can run any type of route, can play all three wide receiver positions. So who are the Seattle Seahawks right now? Russell can put a good spin on it. Oh, yeah, we're going back to the 12s. We need all the 12s. And if I was betting money, Russell got more money now than he had when he first took over the team. But he wouldn't be betting no large stack on this lack of a really talented team. That's what Pete Carroll, since he went back to USC, he could recruit and he could develop talent. This is the least talented team since Russell was drafted and he took over.
And it's unfortunate because I get why teams go through rebuilding phases. Typically, you don't do that when you have a top five quarterback at what should be his peak age and experience wise. They have torn everything down and they are rebuilding in Seattle with their cornerstone still there. And Russell's not going to get this year back. Like, the Seahawks franchise isn't going to get a peak prime year of an excellent quarterback. I think Russell led the NFL in touchdown passes last year, which would be shocking to people. He had something like 20 fourth quarter touchdown passes last year because they were trailing a lot and he had to bring them back. Like, this is, you said it was the least talented Seahawks team. It's not even close. Like, the Seahawks had been his first few years, they were one of the most talented teams in the league. The last couple years, I would say they were right above average, league average, above average defensively, a little below average offensively. At this point, other than Earl Thomas and Doug Baldwin, who are the guys we know that are excellent at their position? I think Shaq Griffin, the corner, Shaquille Griffin, he had a good game yesterday, and he can turn into something. We'll see what Shaquem turns into. But I don't – I mean, they got, I was watching yesterday. I'm like, oh, that's where Barkavius Mingo went, former top 10 pick who didn't work out in Cleveland. Like, there's they just don't have the horses, and that Bears defense is excellent. And they made everything hard on Seattle yesterday.
Let's talk about that Bears defense. Are they better than we all thought, or did Khalil Mack just come in and infuse this team with so much power on defense?
No, we thought they were a top 10 defense, and they were going to get one of the top five players in Khalil Mack. It's not hard to implement a guy with his talent. It's like, I told you, how you get a good defensive end? Stick him. He's like a mean dog. Oh, he knows exactly what to do. Devour the quarterback. And you can put him on a pitch count, which they had him in week number one. But, of course, with the other talent that they have around them, they have another elite pass rusher, Floyd, on the other side, who is a young, up-and-coming premier player, ultimately. But, yes, he was going to make this team better. This is what the Bears need. You see that crowd going crazy? Now, defensive football is appreciated in certain cities more so than other places. In Baltimore, they loved it with Ray Lewis. That's all they won with defense. In a city like Chicago, man, what it does to the crowd, the home field advantage being back there at Soldier Field, man, it's good to see them. What are the Bears known for? Defense, and especially their linebackers. And that the fan base there, man, they have embraced having Khalil Mack, and the defense has decided to use him, and they use him in the right way.
Leonard Floyd's one of the more underrated players in the league. I'm glad Chris brought him up. Khalil's been outstanding. I mean, he has two sacks. Both of them are strip sacks to go along with the pick six he had. And he's generating a double team almost every play, which is making everything. Danny Trevathan's better because of him. Roquan Smith's better because of him. Akeem Hicks is better because of him. For the Bears to be, for not just have a better defense than we thought, a better team than we thought, they got to at some point let the reins off their number two overall pick from a year ago, Mitch Trubisky. He's dead last in the NFL in yards per attempt right now. They are being very cautious with him, and if they are going to be, instead of being a good story, oh, they got to eight wins, if they're going to compete for a wild card spot in the NFC, they're going to have to try to let him throw the ball downfield, which they have been more hesitant to do than any team in the league.
John Gruden sweats every time Khalil Mack gets
He's got as many sacks as the Raiders.
Nice. Coming up, after starting the season 0-2, can you believe things are getting even worse for the New York Giants? Let's talk about that next on First Things First. Back here, First Things First, former head coach Eric Mangini joins us. Coach, nothing makes me happier than the fact that you finally brought your own NFL grid schedule.
I did. Color-coded.
Turn it around. Show everybody. You did such a good job with your magic markers.
Yeah, this is not mine. This is Nick's. And it's probably wrong.
It's a schedule.
You probably listed it wrong.
Hey, Coach, when you start your season 0-2, and as Nick says, the chances of making the playoffs starting season 0-2 are, Nick?
Right about 10%.
Well, the last thing you need is to lose a starter on your offensive line. Giants center John Jalapio is out for the season after breaking his leg. Look, this line struggled, though, even with him allowing 8 sacks in 2 games. Coach, I ask you, what do the Giants need to do to even have a chance this season, besides starting it over?
Well, one of the big problems in New York is when you set these expectations so high, where you've got the once-in-a-generation back. We've drafted a once-in-a-generation back, and then you've got the once-in-a-generation wide receiver, and you create this idea that everything is going to work perfectly at the start of the season. It's not the case. This is still a team that's coming off a major transition on every single level. guys have to get used to playing with each other. They've got to start to understand what each other's skill sets are, what their strengths are. And there's not that had that grace period hasn't been in place because of what's been said about what the team should do. Now, that being said, I think that they have to commit to running the ball more with Saquon Barkley. And I don't he's a home run hitter. He's best when he's on the outside. And we saw that with a 68-yard touchdown. But it's got to be more consistent. Last game, what did he catch, 10 balls?
14 balls for 80 yards.
Okay, and that's great. You're getting the ball into his hands. But if he's a runner and you're consistently giving the ball, the thing that does for the passing game is it slows down the pass rush. They can't just tee off. If you're lining up and letting and passing every, you know, the majority of the time, then guys start teeing off. You've got to have that balance. And if you can hit one home run a game with Saquon Barkley with putting the ball in his hands, then great. But, you know, 14 catches, I just think it's the wrong way of using them.
Right now, through 2 weeks, and I think you make a great point about where they set expectations and how they talked about Saquon in the money they gave Odell, the money they gave Nate Solder, bringing back Eli, cutting the draft pick quarterback who was supposed to be the heir apparent in Davis Webb. Everything they said and every decision they made made it seem like this team believes we can compete right now,
this year.
We have a couple-year window, 3-year window maybe with Eli. We can compete for the playoffs and therefore a championship because Eli's history is get him in the playoffs. We got as good a shot as anybody to win the whole thing. And that, at least through 2 weeks, seems to be a major miscalculation. And if we want to shift the blame from the quarterback to the offensive line, even maybe shift the blame is the wrong way to put it. If we want to say the biggest issue with the team's not the quarterback, it's the offensive line not giving the quarterback a chance, that's fine. But the same people in charge are in charge of the offensive line. They're in charge of the entire team. And if this offensive line's not good enough to give an immobile quarterback time to do what he needs to do, or not good enough to block for a generational back in Saquon Barkley, then no matter how you slice it, the way this team was built headed into this year was a miscalculation. Because every decision they made said win right now. And right now they look like a team that is more likely to have a top five pick again than to be one of the five final teams remaining at the end of the year.
I think sometimes when it's easy to keep going over and over and over the draft. And I don't like talking about the Giants and continuing to go back over their decision as far as a quarterback. That's the decision that they made to go forward. But it doesn't mean that they were going to win right now. They could have still thought as a general manager, as a head coach, you know, we are a couple seasons away. Because they also did have some salary cap restrictions. They didn't have $100 million like the Jets to be able to go out and wholesale changes. No. And you have to be able to make the best of your decisions that you previously made. Their left tackle, moving him to right tackle. That's all they, besides cutting him, putting him on the street, that's their only solution as far as their offensive line. That offensive line is a couple years away from being in sync. And I'm like, Coach, if you want to be able to protect that offensive line, I wouldn't be trying to throw the ball to Barkley as much as I do. I would be trying to run the ball and run it downhill. I would be trying to play like the old Giants, Bill Parcells, and I would try to shorten the game. The defense is not dependable enough to be able to shut people down, so I need to be able to shorten the game and to fortify my offensive line by not backing Eli up 40 times a game because I don't believe that's a strength. And if you can't protect the quarterback, you can't get the ball to a wide receiver. I don't think people's expectations, because people play fantasy football too much, they think because you have a good back and you have a good receiver, oh, you're going to be one of the most explosive. No, that's not a requirement in the NFL. You've got to be able to block people. And the number one thing for offensive football besides the quarterback is protection. And the Giants don't have it.
But with that, forget fantasy football. Wouldn't you think this is an offense that could score more than 2 touchdowns in 2 weeks?
Yeah, they should be able to.
Against Jacksonville and Dallas? No. Look who they're playing against.
I would think, though, Chris, with Dallas and Jacksonville, there should be. I mean, 2 touchdowns isn't exactly lightning.
All right. At the end of the season, when both those defenses are top five defenses, will we go back and say, yeah, you know something? Going against those defenses would have been tough. Maybe 14 points is not the realistic, but you need to realize you're going against two of the better defenses that we're going to see. And what do they bring? Pressure. What don't the Giants have? an offensive line. So when you're playing them to start the season, Coach, that's why your weaknesses can be exploited more, and that's why the G-men look bad the first 2 weeks.
And I agree in the sense that if you're playing a team that you know you don't match up well with offensively in terms of the protection, you've got to run the ball. Even if you're getting 2 yards a carry, even if you're a little bit behind the chains, you have to slow down that offensive or defensive line. The worst thing you can do is line up in empty or line up in obvious passing situations and announce to the defense, hey, we're throwing the ball on this down, because now you get line games. You get so many different things that the O-line has to handle that's difficult to handle against, you know, an average group. But now an above-average group, it makes it that much harder. So just you commit to the run, and that helps Odell Beckham. That puts once they have to get extra people in the box, here's a really, really talented guy that's one-on-one outside. You've got chances for big plays.
But if that is the strategy, and you've said all the time, like when the Giants have been great, it's been through defense historically. They're a big, powerful team. When I say the offseason, I think you believe I'm just talking about the draft. Like, if that's true about that's their best pass, what's your big criticism about Nate Solder? What is he not great at? Run blocking is what you've said, that he's a good pass protector, but he's not a mauler that's going to go get you run blocking. I know they had to upgrade their left tackle spot, but Andrew Norwell was there. They went after him. The money they could have given him, Jacksonville ends up signing him. They signed Nate Solder. There's just, to me, there's a lot of this team.
But Andrew Norwell is not a left tackle.
No, I get it. That's why I understand that. But they drafted, at the top of the second round, they drafted a guard, which is Norwell's position. If they sign Norwell, then maybe they draft a tackle in the top of the second round instead of that.
Left tackle, though.
The guy, whomever they draft, I'm talking in that situation. If they had signed Norwell, they'd use the money there. Then instead of drafting a guard, they draft left tackle. The point that I'm making is this. You have, I get that. I think Jacksonville and Dallas are excellent defenses. I think Dallas is an underrated defense. I also think when we look back on the season, we'll see two of those two teams' most dominant defensive performances were against this team. And while they have a bad offensive line, Houston's got a terrible offensive line. Seattle's got a terrible offensive line. Buffalo does. Cleveland does. San Francisco does. It's not like the Giants have a historically bad offensive line.
How did Tom Brady do against that Jacksonville defense?
I mean, they scored 20 points.
Okay. They scored 20. How many did the Giants score?
The Giants against Jacksonville, did they score 15? They scored 15 points. Yeah, and Dallas against Carolina scored 16, and the Giants scored 13 in that game. I get it. I understand. I just, the Giants to me are right now underachieving, even given their deficiencies on the offensive line. It can't just be those five guys blocking. It's got to be more than that.
No, it's not just those five guys blocking. It's a complement between that and the play calling, and they both got to work together. And it's the unrealistic expectations that you built up in this offseason that to me was unfair to a lot of those guys.
All right, Coach, stick around. We got to take a break. Coming up, how much can Josh Gordon help the New England Patriots? That's next on First Things First. Back here on First Things First with Coach Mangini. It's been quite a 24 hours for Josh Gordon. Went from arguably the worst franchise in the league in the Browns to arguably the best in the Patriots. New England traded for him yesterday in exchange for a fifth-round pick. Josh Gordon has played just 6 games since the 2014 season, missing a ton of time with substance abuse issues. According to reports, he is available to play Sunday against the Lions despite a hamstring injury. All right, Coach, how much better does Gordon make the New England Patriots? What was your reaction when you heard the trade, and how much better does he make this team?
Well, my initial reaction was that this is just a lottery ticket. That's all it is. So they give away a fifth if he plays 10 games. If he doesn't, they get back a seventh. So they really swap picks if he doesn't end up playing in 10 games. And there's no telling what he can be there, because a big part of being in New England is being a trustworthy player, and is being a player that can line up, can run the right routes, can be there every day on a consistent basis. And that hasn't been Josh's track record. Now, that being said, they need a lot of help. So I would imagine that they will try to give him a very small package of plays that he can do really well. So he'll be, I see him as being a specialty player. So maybe he comes in and runs a fade. Maybe he's got a post. Maybe he's got a concise package that Tom knows. He knows he'll run well, he'll execute well. And that, to me, is the best way for them to use him in the short term. until they understand who he is, where he is, what he can do.
Go ahead, Jenna.
I was going to say, what's the conversation Belichick has with Gordon when he comes in, or is he treated like another wide receiver that comes in? Is it, these are our rules, stick to, or does anyone doesn't even go there?
Well, look, here's the hard part. This isn't, when he left Cleveland, he left his best chance to be successful. They were helping him. They were patient with him. They did all those things. He's going to an environment where you need to perform, and there's not going to be anybody leading you through that process. There's not going to be anybody sitting next to you through that process in terms of being like a Sherpa. You're on your own, and you better be able to excel in that environment. And it's not easy.
And there will not be second chances. Like, I mean, it was a final straw, him being late on Saturday, potentially misleading the team, and according to Mary Kay Cabot, was not himself. That was the final straw of many. In New England, the first straw would be the last straw, right? If he is late for a meeting or a practice early in his time there, he'll get the same treatment any of these. Hey, see, how many wide receivers they've been through since March?
28.
28 wide receivers since March. And keep in mind, that's with Edelman's been on the roster the whole time. Matthew Slater's a wide receiver special teamer. He's been on the roster, as has Philip Dorsett and Chris Hogan. So that means, basically, to churn the bottom two guys. Cordarrelle Patterson has stuck recently, but how many names have we said? Kenny Britt, Malcolm Mitchell, Corey Coleman, Chad Hansen, the dude from the Jets. Amara Darbo was there for a cup of coffee. Like, they are churning the bottom of the roster repeatedly. I think the America is far overreacting to this. Twitter responded yesterday. Smart people on Twitter, by the way. I'm not just talking about random folks. People I respect their opinion of.
Like me.
Of course. This is Randy Moss 2.0. No, it's not. It is. Randy was an established star player who had two down years in Oakland, and they had similar draft compensation in the trade for him. But you knew, A, that Randy wasn't going to be a guy who was suspended and kicked out of the league, and B, you knew that if Randy re-engaged, he was immediately going to be a dominant player again. You don't know even that if Josh stays on the straight and narrow, you don't know what his best is anymore. The guy, he has what? He's got 19 catches in the last 4 years? Like, that's where he is. Now, I still think it talent-wise, he's as good as anyone they have on the roster, but I don't think they're doing this expecting huge things from Josh Gordon.
But you brought up Cordarrelle Patterson. I think that's a really good example of what I was trying to say earlier. Cordarrelle, they're using in a very specific way. And in using him in that way, he's being productive in their system. So I would imagine in the short term, they're going to try to utilize Josh in the same sense, have a package for him to allow him to be successful. And I know they've churned over 28 guys, but nobody's as talented as this guy. And this is serious. It's like you go to the corner store, you buy a lottery ticket. If it hits, it hits big. If it doesn't hit, they switch a seventh rounder for a fifth rounder.
Yeah, it's just a transaction for them. They're not emotionally about it like the people on Twitter or like sports fans. No, Belichick, no, he's not going to sit him down and tell him a whole bunch of things and everything. No, and what difference would it make? It didn't work for Josh when he was in middle school. It didn't work for him when he was in high school. Didn't work for him at a couple colleges. And it didn't work through a couple ownership, a few general managers, a couple coaches in Cleveland. What do you think these people have been telling them? Like, there's no magic in New England. There's no magic. You know what happens? I talked to Randy Moss when he left Oakland and was going to New England. Now, the conversation didn't end the way people might expect it because Randy was not happy with the things that I told him. Because I told him the way he represented himself as a football player, that if he showed up one day like that in New England, they would get rid of him. And if he didn't change his attitude and had to have a different perspective once he got there, his career would be over with. If Bill Belichick can't resurrect your career, it's over with. So I knew, and Randy was determined to be able to change the way people saw the last 2 years. So I knew Randy's state of mind when he was going to New England. And I can guarantee you it's not the same state of mind that Josh has when he decided that I'm going to be late and I'm going to tell the organization a different story than what happened to him at his promo shoot. And so when people compare it to Randy Moss, no, it's not Randy Moss, all right? Randy Moss is in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And for someone to compare Josh to him and where he is, it's really very, very naive for them to be doing that. This is closer to Albert Haynesworth People don't want to remember him when New England signed him. That's what it's closer to being, all right, compared to Randy Moss and him going on to break NFL records, and to compare Josh as a student of the game to comparing to Randy Moss. You don't know what you're talking about as far as football. Randy Moss was brilliant. As far as the offenses that he could remember, his ability to be able to retract information from even years ago, his Rolodex of information he had on NFL DBs, the positions that he could play inside the offense. Like, it's not even comparable, Coach.
And Randy Moss had an offseason. Randy Moss had time. Randy Moss had worked with Tom Brady. It's not like he showed up on Monday. So let's say Josh got there last night, had his physical. He's going to work with the coaches this afternoon after have the game plan in place and then be expected to play. That's a totally different scenario than what we were dealing with Randy, where he had worked with Tom Brady. And at the end of the day, this is one of those opportunities where Josh is going to make a decision whether he wants to do it or whether he doesn't want to do it. It's going to have to be his decision because no one's going to be nurturing him through that. Now, what I do think New England will do well is find out what he can do, put him in the game in those positions. And the last thing is, it's really hard to improve your team once the season starts because the players that become available, they're typically not great upgrades. Mm-hmm. This is a unique opportunity, if it hits even to some degree, for them to substantially improve a position of desperate need, at least in the short term, and that's why I think they took the chance.
All right, the Patriots are in Detroit on Sunday. They will have Josh Gordon on their team. Thanks, Coach.
Maybe.
You're right. Maybe. Coming up, why is Antonio Brown tweeting trade me? That's next on First Things First. Sunday is a great slate of NFL action, starting with Saquon Barkley and the Giants taking on the Houston Texans. And then America's Game of the Week, Ezekiel Elliott and those Cowboys battle Russell Wilson and the Seahawks. It's all on Fox and the Fox Sports app. You can check your local listings for the game in your area. We're going to get to Pat Mahomes and the Chiefs in a minute, but first, Russell Wilson with a 19-yard pass to Tyler Lockett for a touchdown.
See, this was a perfect pass. Nearly perfect coverage, and Russell just drops it in to Tyler Lockett.
And it's really hard to throw to a guy under 6 foot at that back pylon the way the coaches teach, because the quarterback, even a tall quarterback, can't see him, let alone little Russell. Little Russell couldn't see him at all.
And if you were watching the broadcast, you'll get this. How you like those apples?
Yeah, I don't think they're going to win an Emmy for that.
Georgia Boom. High School football, North Gwinnett, quarterback J.R. Martin puts the ball behind the back, eludes the defender, then fires a 38-yard touchdown strike to Garrison Manor.
Man, that's a little and-one streak ball to the football field. Behind the back, toss this downfield.
He threw that about 50 yards.
Yeah, and by the way, what's the corner doing? He had all the time in the world to catch up.
I used to tell a corner, if you're going to do that, I'm going to charge you a fee. You might as well buy a ticket and sit in the stand.
Oh, this is Connor Barth, a 6'4 dunker from Fort Worth, Texas, off the wall, between the legs.
I thought this was my guy from Georgetown. Anytime I see a Caucasian dunker, I'd be like, there go my guy. I'd be like, okay, someone else is on his corner.
And Connor Barth, isn't that the same name as an NFL kicker? Look at this guy. I'd be more impressed if it was the NFL kicker. A little East Bay off the glass. Go
That's
get
impressive,
it, young
man.
Now. That is impressive. I like it.
You guys want to do a little contender or pretender?
I would love to, Jenna.
9 undefeated teams in the NFL, starting with the Broncos. They're 2-0 for the 6th consecutive year, longest active streak. CC, are the Broncos playoff contenders or pretenders?
We got to go with pretenders. Off to a great start and everything. Good opposition to go against to get those 2 wins. So the Raiders. John Gruden don't make no adjustments after halftime. Still living 10 years ago. And they get a game against Seattle. You saw Seattle last night. That offensive line couldn't block Von Miller. No, they're pretenders, Nick.
All right, so it is, I am judging this based on, do I think you can get to 9 wins?
Don't be making no excuses.
I'm not making excuses. I want people to understand the reason, because I think the AFC is very weak in the middle and awful at the bottom. So do I think you can get to 9 wins? I think Denver can. They drew the NFC West this year with outside of the Rams. I don't think there's a good team in that division. So can they get to 9 wins starting 2-0? Can they go 7-7 the rest of the way? I think they can. So are they playoff contenders?
Yes.
They got to be.
The answer
contenders.
Is yes.
Yeah.
down on Case Keenum in and out every year.
Jenna was so
ignorant. Nobody gives him any love.
Can I change my answer?
No.
I forgot.
You already
down on Case, in and out. Like, what is it?
All right. Moving on to the 2-0 Bengals, who sit alone atop the AFC North. They beat the Colts in week one, followed that up with a win against the Ravens. So, Nick, are the Bengals playoff contenders or pretenders?
Man, 2-0 about to turn into 2-2. I call this team pretenders. Unlike the Broncos who get the NFC West, they got the NFC South, and they got two games at Carolina and at Atlanta the next 2 weeks. That bloom is going to come off the Andy Dalton Rose, no pun intended. I say they are pretenders. I think it's 8-8 again for them.
There goes Nick with the schedule and everything.
Well, yeah.
All right, looking at it.
Look, well, I mean, now it makes sense. The team's in 5 days.
Yeah, what about the Saints? You saw them against Tampa Bay. What kind of defense they going to have?
I didn't say this. I said they're playing.
I'm believing Cincinnati because of it's lightweight in the AFC. They're going to be contenders this year based on any team that's within a 30-mile radius of where I grew up and everything. That's my excuse.
That's yours.
All right. Bengals contenders.
And you predicted a big year from A.J. Green.
A.J. Green.
Thus far, he's having a big year. See if he can continue that along with John Ross.
Yeah, he's always blooming, even though.
He's always blooming. Okay.
Yes.
Even though. Okay. Okay. All right. Read.
Moving on to the Dolphins, who are off to their first 2-0 start since 2013. They started with a win against Tennessee. Then they beat the Jets this past Sunday. CC, are the Dolphins playoff contenders or pretenders?
I thought the Dolphins were going to be much improved. I did a lot of studying them this summer and everything. I had them in the first game against the Titans. They got a lot of speed at wide receiver, and they're going to get Devontae Parker back soon. I'm afraid of Tannehill a little bit in the pocket. I like the way he throws the football, but it turns it over a little much. I believe the Dolphins and Adam Gase are contenders.
Listen, going into the year, I thought there was going to be one of the worst teams in the NFL. I listened to my man C, who said, told me before the game, man, watch Miami. This is a far improved team, just like he said. Last year, they had struggles at quarterback all year with Tannehill being out.
Still won 6 games.
And they're 2-0. They still get 2 games against Buffalo. They have home games against Chicago and Detroit. So, yeah, I'm looking at the schedule. Do I think they can get to 9 wins? That's not even to mention they're already 1-0 on the Jets. Yeah, I do. So.
And New England struggles down there in Miami.
You said this. We were walking to the elevator yesterday, and you said New England can lose the game in Miami, particularly if it's the type of weather there typically is down in Miami, one of those sweltering games. I can't believe I'm saying this. Miami Dolphins, playoff contenders.
Yep.
Wow.
I like it.
Can't believe I'm saying it.
And finally, the Buccaneers, who are 2-0 for only the second time since 2005. Tampa has been carried by Ryan Fitzpatrick, who has consecutive games of at least 400 yards passing and 4 touchdowns. Nick, Bucs, playoff contenders or pretenders?
Bucs fans are already mad at me. Pretenders. They're going to stay mad at me. I know they're 2-0. I know they've looked great. I get all of it. The NFC is too difficult. And if you tell me Fitzy's going to start all 16 and play like this, then of course they're contenders. But he's not going to start all 16. And even if he did, he could not keep this up. I don't trust their running game in particular. And so, no, to me, great start, great story, but they're pretenders.
They got their team leader coming back this week, old Jameis. Jameis going to be delivering team speeches like this and everything after next week and everything. So
I can't with that.
Eat the W, Jenna.
Yeah, it's going to be
either eat the W or hold the L.
That's the reason why he can't connect with DeSean Jackson on the long ball, because he throws it with his knuckles and everything like that and everything. No, he's going to be back. They're going to be right back to being pretenders. They left Fitzy in there, I would say that they were yes.
Wow.
If they were be contenders with Fitzy.
Little Fitz magic.
Yeah, with the pimp outfit, the chains and
all
everything afterwards. Yes.
Jenna, either eat a W.
Oh, I'll hold this
L
every day before I see that video again. Coming up, is Antonio Brown becoming yet another distraction in Pittsburgh? They got a lot of them. That's next on First Things First. All right, time for stories to start your morning. The Bears defense was the story against Seattle last night. Khalil Mack had one of Chicago's 6 sacks on Russell Wilson, and Prince Amukamura took a pick to the house. 24-17, Chicago was your final. All right, see, how scary is this Bears defense?
Man, when you can get to the passer like they are, we knew they were going to be good. They got a good defensive scheme even before Khalil Mack got there. You put him on the left defensive end. You flop him on the right defensive end. There is no defensive system that he doesn't fit into. It's going to be really interesting to see how good this defense gets. What variation of the coverages do they start putting with that rush?
And I know Seattle's had a bad offensive line for quite some time, but going into last night's game, only three times in Russell's career had he been sacked five times in a first half. It happened last night. So even by Seattle standards, that was a dominant defensive first half they dealt with from Chicago. And on almost all these plays, whether Khalil's making it like he does that one or the other ones, you see Khalil collapse the pocket and Russell have to step into the rush, which leads to the sacks other guys are getting. He's been a force multiplier to the extreme for that
defense. The Raiders don't miss him.
Nah. He has as many sacks as their team.
The whole team.
More forced fumbles than their team.
The whole team.
Do you regret that? No.
No, not at all.
Quit bringing it up.
Moving on to the Dez Bryant saga. While as many as 10 teams were interested in trading for Josh Gordon, it is week three, and Dez Bryant is still not on a team. Nick, how bad of a look is this for Dez?
As a wise man likes to say, it ain't great.
Are you the guy?
Yeah, I'm the wise man. Oh, see, you said the worst day for Dez Bryant was the day Jerry cut him instead of even offering him a salary reduction.
The worst day
since then was when?
Yesterday.
Why?
Because journeyman guys who haven't proven themselves, Breshad Perriman, a bust with Baltimore. He signs with Washington. They signed Michael Floyd, who's had a troubled last two or three years, unproductive. Even New England couldn't use him. They signed both of those guys. New England trading for Josh Gordon?
And those were the two teams that Dez specifically said, I fit there, right?
Yeah, he was courting them on Twitter. Do they even say that now?
He's sliding into DMs typically.
Okay, no problem. He tried to slide into their DMs.
Do you think Dez slid into Washington's DMs? Hey, you up? What up? Got a wide receiver. Want to catch passes and chill? What's going down?
They sent that message to his last girlfriend to tell on him.
There is movement in the kicker community, a sentence I've never said before. The Vikings cut Daniel Carlson and will sign Dan Bailey. The former Cowboy Bailey is the second most accurate kicker in NFL history. CeCe, how big of a deal is this for the Vikings?
Going back kicking in an environment he's very comfortable in. Jerry's World, indoors, Vikings, indoors. If they're going to reach their goal, you need to be able to depend on a guy that once you get to the 35-yard line, that you can secure points. It takes momentum away from the team. The Vikings were crushed by the loss and their lack of having a kicker, especially in that overtime where he missed two kicks. Yes, this is the exact move that they should make, getting one of the best kickers that the game's ever seen.
I think great kickers and great punters are a totally undervalued resource in this league. Dan Bailey is a great kicker. He is one of the most accurate kickers, as Jenna mentioned, in league history. This is an enormous upgrade. I understand they drafted Daniel Carlson. They traded up to get him. You know why? Because they knew they needed a kicker.
Yes.
Now they got one. Mm-hmm. If Dan Bailey was available in free agency instead of being cut at the end of training camp, they wouldn't have drafted the kicker. They'd have just gone and signed him. This is a huge upgrade at a critical spot for a team trying to win a Super Bowl.
All right, finally, the Texans fell to 0-2 with a loss to the Titans on Sunday. Not the start that Deshaun Watson was hoping for coming back from ACL surgery, but the second-year quarterback is still optimistic. Take a listen.
We're fine. I mean, if you one of the guys or one of the people, one of the fans hitting the panic button, then that's on y'all. Don't hop on the train later on down the season. So no point of panicking. I know I'm not going to panic, especially from what I came from, you know, in my childhood. So, you know, it comes with it. I've took losses before, take it under the chin, and, you know, try to get better from it.
All right, Nick, what do you think about what Deshaun Watson said? Is he right that this 0-2 team should not panic?
I understand the argument. They haven't played a home game yet. First two games on the road. First game's in New England. That's a brutal way to start your season. And he, at least, personally, after not looking at all like himself in week one, looked much better and much closer to the Deshaun Watson we expect to see this year in week two. But from a team standpoint, they just lost a game to Blaine Gabbert. They just lost the game because early in the game, they did not cover the gunner on a punt team. That you knew the Titans were going to struggle to score. You know how you knew? Because Blaine Gabbert was their starting quarterback. And so you just can't give up defensive scores, special team scores. And before Red Zone Channel even has time to show us the game, they're getting a 66-yard touchdown because they don't cover the gunner. This is one of the most poorly coached teams in football. And they just extended their coach to a multi-year deal this offseason. I think a five-year contract extension, at least 4 years. I like the talent on the Texans. I understand that Deshaun is getting healthier. Will Fuller, we saw him in week 2, and that connection with Deshaun has not gone anywhere after he caught 7 touchdowns from him in 4 games last year. But they go into every game, nearly every game, with a decided schematic disadvantage. And to lose a game against the Titans when Blaine Gabbert's the starter, if that doesn't induce some form of panic, then not many things will.
Yeah, all games aren't the same. All wins and losses aren't the same. When you lose to the Titans and they did have Blaine Gabbert playing as the quarterback, you begin to question, like, who we are as a team. So, no, I wouldn't panic after 2 weeks. I understand that. But I'm going to give you another 2 weeks, because after 4 weeks, you pretty much are who you are. And it's going to be hard. Coach Mangini talked about New England might have improved their team yesterday. How are they going to improve? And a lot of that is going to be on Deshaun's back. He's got to improve as a quarterback. The offensive line support he's not going to get. He is not going to get support of a running game. So I would be concerned if I was him if I don't come out of these next 2 games with some type of identity. What kind of offense are they going to be? Like, what kind of quarterback is he going to be? We don't know. Is he going to be a big play offense? Is he going to always go for the big play? Or is he going to be a precision passer? Can he dink and dunk and be methodically move people down the field? We don't know who he's going to be. They don't know who they are as a team. So these next 2 weeks are very critical for
and
them.
And if they're going to compete for a playoff spot this year, it's going to have to be through the offense, because this idea of this dominant Texans front seems like it's always going to be an idea. Like, oh, wait till Watt and Clowney get together. Well, right. Clowney, not shockingly, missed week 2 with a foot injury. Somehow still got a 15-yard penalty from the bench, which led to a Tennessee field goal, by the way, which was an enormous play in the game. And J.J. Watt has a sack and a half in the last 3 years. So, like, we've got to – the idea of Watt and Clowney coming together was great when they drafted Clowney 5 years ago. But Clowney's injuries and Watt's injuries have now made it so we've never seen it. And I don't know that we will see it, because I don't think J.J. Watt is where people believe he is at this point in his career. And Clowney still is struggling playing a full 16-game season.
All right, let's move on to the Steelers now. Somehow, Pittsburgh has found a way to have even more drama. Le'Veon Bell is still nowhere to be found, and now the drama spilled to the internet yesterday when a former Steelers PR guy tweeted about Antonio Brown. He wrote, AB needs to thank his lucky stars because he was drafted by a team that had Ben, and Ben got AB paid. You know darn well he wouldn't put up those numbers for other teams. To which Antonio Brown responded, trade me. Let's find out. CC, AB seems to think he'd be just as good no matter where he played. Is he right?
Oh, yeah. He'd be real good. He's a good wide receiver. He would be real good. Why? He's got speed. He's got route running. He's got the discipline of a pro athlete. He works on his body 24/7, spends an exorbitant amount of money on his body. He's got a great team of people around him. He's a guy that always plays with a little chip on his shoulder. He's motivated, self-motivated, doesn't need to be in a certain offense, doesn't need to be with a certain coach. No, that's who AB is. He's one of the hardest workers on the Pittsburgh Steelers. Yeah, he's a wide receiver. He's got a little bit of diva in him, but shoot, they taking him everywhere. As you see, what New England's willing to accept with Josh Gordon, like, of course, that's just normal behavior. I didn't think his response was a big deal. You know, someone used to work for the organization. They made a comment. He commented back on Twitter. I know this won't be a distraction the way people talk about, you know, Pittsburgh Steelers, they always have some type of distraction. No, I don't believe this is a distraction. The other guys on the team don't care anything about this. They want AB on the team. AB's well-liked by his teammates. That's why they gave him that big extension. It wasn't just Ben was the quarterback. No, he's one of the most productive wide receivers in the history of the game.
Yeah.
And that's the reason he forced them to pay him. All right?
Twice. They paid him twice.
He forced them, too, because he was not a high draft pick that they had put a whole bunch of draft capital into. And they decided to let other receivers go. Mike Wallace, who was a higher draft pick than him, we're going to let him go. Even this offseason, Martavius Bryant, we're going to let him go.
Emmanuel Sanders in between those
all
two.
All those guys.
And listen, I understand the idea that if you're saying if Blaine Gabbert, we were just talking about, was his quarterback, would his numbers be as good? Of course not. But great is great. I saw DeAndre Hopkins is not as good as Antonio Brown. He's very good. He's not as good as Antonio Brown. It didn't matter who his quarterback was. He was a monster. Chris Carter. Yeah, it was nice the couple years you had Warren Moon when you had the Randall Cunningham resurgence. But in the meantime, didn't much matter. You still put up numbers. Great is great. The discussion about Antonio Brown is how many players under 6 feet tall in the history of the sport are better than him? And I do not mind him clapping back at this person. This dude works with the team. PR, and people should know, PR it in
used
pro
to work
football.
With the team.
Correct. That's right. I thought I said works. Pardon me. Worked with the team from 2010 to 2017. And I read the guy's LinkedIn this morning. He was exactly what I thought he was. The guy who organizes interviews with players, who's there with them in the locker room. He has relationships with these guys. And now he takes a job with Allegheny County, and all of a sudden he's just talking saucy on Twitter about AB. And the other part of this that I don't mind AB clapping back, and maybe it was not this deep of a level to him, but I'm not sure, is the continual protection of Big Ben. Like, what about the counterfactual? How much has Big Ben benefited from having this superstar wide receiver the last decade? Now, Big Ben's a great player of his own right as well, but that has been a mutually beneficial relationship. And the idea that, oh, AB's so lucky, he's had Big Ben. Sure, he's lucky. And Big Ben's lucky he's had Antonio Brown
all
as well.
All Steelers are lucky. And the reason why they're lucky is because the Rooney family has decided we're going to run an organization. It's going to be first class. We're going to draft people. And we're going to try to enhance their professional career by supporting them with not good coaching, great coaching, not with good teammates, great other players to play with. That's been the Steelers' family tradition. All right, so if someone is lucky, it's anyone drafted by the Pittsburgh Steelers. Anyone that played for, oh, let's go, Mike Tomlin, Bill Cowher, oh, Chuck Noll.
Right, that's
oh, yeah.
All their coaches.
Yeah, they don't know how to run an organization. Yeah, so anyone that plays for the Pittsburgh Steelers, and even when you were there as the PR guy who's going to build it, go get me and take me in and out of interviews, you were lucky because they have done things on a first-class level since they started the organization.
So maybe we have this all wrong. Maybe all the stuff that we consider or that it's out there to be considered as distractions or drama, maybe this is who the organization is. Maybe this all works for them. If no one in the locker room seems to be bothered by any of it, then it's not a big deal.
I don't think we can say because this one is an isolated incident that's not a big deal. None of it is. Like, what you have with the Steelers is their three stars, their three best players, all of them in the last 12 months have had something that is a non-football discussion. For their quarterback, it was, maybe I should quit. Why didn't we spike the football to disconnect with the offensive
with
coordinator to where it was then now I'm in the best shape of my life.
But those are all football problems. Those are all just football things. If you're in the football business, oh, your quarterback didn't like a call. That's normal. It's a normal day at work. So the Rooney family in saying that, oh, this is what the Rooney family wants? No, they're not going to suffocate the players, but they're going to have talented players who have an opportunity to win championships. And that's what they provided to the three coaches that they have had. They have drafted, and they have had great general managers who keep talent around them. That's why they've been fortunate or lucky, as people would like to say.
All right, let's take a break there. Coming up, will the return of Carson Wentz cure all of the Eagles' problems? That's next on First Things First. Back here with Coach Mangini, we're talking Eagles. After a 1-1 start with an underwhelming Nick Foles at the helm, the Eagles were happy to announce Carson Wentz will start Sunday against the Colts. It will be the first game Wentz has played since he injured his knee back in week 14 of last season. So what will head coach Doug Peterson's approach be? He says when it comes to Carson, he's not holding back.
In my mind, you know, and we all felt the same way that he's cleared, and there's no need to hold back. Now, we're still going to have conversations, no different when he was healthy. We're still going to have conversations about protecting yourself as we do with all the quarterbacks and, you know, making sure we do the right things there. But there's no limitations. Thing is, I'm not going to coach scared. I'm not going to coach paranoid. I'm not going to go in thinking, oh, no, we can't do this. We can't do that. We just have to continue to go play. And I got to coach that way. You know, I'm excited to get him back out there. But, you know, at the same time, it's not about one guy. and we can't lose sight of that. You know, we got other issues, you know, offensively, defensively, and special teams that we need to coach up. And as exciting it is to have him back, your starting quarterback, we still have some other areas to fix.
Look, Coach Peterson is right, but it kind of might be about one guy, considering the guy that they had in there before was a little underwhelming the last 2 weeks. How much can Carson Wentz help fix this offense?
It's not certain at this point. He's coming back from a significant injury. We don't know where he is, and game speed is so different than anything that you simulate in practice or as many drills you want to put a guy through. And I get the idea of not coaching scared. I appreciate that. However, you need to make sure you're making calculated decisions and you're coaching smart and you're not putting him in a situation that he can't handle. And you don't truly know what he can handle until you see him out there at game speed. Now, will he be the same guy that we saw before the injury? I don't think that's going to happen right away. That's gonna take a couple games for him to get back up to that speed.
What do you mean when you say not put him in a position? You don't want to coach scared. You don't want to put him in a bad position. What are you talking about there?
Well, whether it's the run pass options, how many times you're going to have him carry the ball, how many times you're going to have him make a decision whether or not to hand it off or keep it himself.
Do they remove the running part? Are they just faking the ball just for window dressing, just to pull the defense? He really doesn't have an all-out option that he can run on those RPOs, and they're just more of a play-action fake.
Yeah, and that to me would make more sense, where you give the illusion that he could keep the ball, but you don't actually put him in a position where he's carrying the ball and he's got to be a runner at this point.
And so for the Eagles, I do want people to remember, because I know they won the Super Bowl without him. So everyone's like, oh, it was the Eagles. The story of the Eagles was the great team. No matter who the quarterback was, it became that. The story through 13 games was the MVP-level play they're getting at their quarterback position. Remember, they didn't have Ronald Darby for 10 weeks. He was their best corner. We knew they had a great defensive front, but they had a stretch where they scored 27-26, 34-28, 34-31, 51-37-31. The story of the Eagles with a fully functional Carson Wentz last year that put them in a position to be the number one seed was, oh, my God, this team third and long doesn't matter. They can go get it. Any third down, Wentz's rating was like 127. They were a machine through the air offensively. Jay Ajayi was a midseason addition, right? That upgraded their running game. But it was the triumvirate of wide receivers, by the way, which is very different right now because Alshon Jeffrey's hurt. Torrey Smith got flipped out for Mike Wallace. Mike Wallace is now hurt as well. But it was Torrey Smith, Alshon Jeffrey, and Nelson Aguilar, Zach Ertz as well. They were a dominant passing attack. And while Foles duplicated that in the NFC Championship game in the Super Bowl, we saw leading up to those games and since those games more of who he actually is. Even if Carson Wentz is 75% of what he was last year, I still think that gives them better quarterback play than you can expect on a typical Nick Foles game. But the Eagles have issues other than their offense right now. Their secondary in particular does not look like the team that won the Super Bowl last year. They are not attacking the way any parts of the passing game the way they did that last year in the Super Bowl run. Those are things I don't think Wentz specifically is going to be able to fix.
And with them having all the injuries they do at wide receivers, they're going to get Alshon Jeffries back potentially in the next couple weeks. But when you have Nelson Aguilar as your number one guy, when last year he was probably their third or fourth behind Ertz, behind also the deep threat that they had in Torrey Smith. He played, and Alshon Jeffries played magnificent in the championship game and in the Super Bowl. So what can they do to help him out? Let's run the football. We say you got one of the best offensive line. Let's be a little more physical going forward. And their number of running backs going to have to play a bigger role in the passing game. So I see their screen game being able to help the quarterback, that to alleviate pressure, and he needs to be able to throw to his backs on a regular basis because he doesn't have but Ertz and Aguilar as guys that he has chemistry with.
And the thing that we talked about a lot with Carson Wentz, even when he was on the streak, is he was getting hit at a rate that put him in the top 10 of dropback hits per dropback prior to him getting injured, and that to me is still a real concern. Now, the secondary, yeah, is that an issue? But what have we always talked about with Philly, the defensive line? know what makes a secondary look good is a effective defensive line. So that's how they've built this team. They've built this team around the defensive line, around their ability to get pass rush. So they need to hold up their end of the bargain as well, and the secondary won't get exposed.
How realistic is the time frame for when you could potentially see the Carson Wentz we saw last year? Or should we maybe not expect to see the Carson, the MVP Carson Wentz?
Well, this is the thing. I hate when people do this. It's not a bad question. But anytime someone's an MVP, it's Carson would have been trying to get back to that level, even if he wasn't hurt. Say he had gone through the whole season. Say they don't win the Super Bowl, win the Super Bowl. It doesn't matter.
This thing, Matt Ryan, 16.
It's his third season. Like, he doesn't know that he's gotten it right. So let alone being sidetracked by an injury. Like, so to think that he has the ultimate confidence, no. And he's coming back to a team that he's not familiar with. And they're going to be coming after the Eagles. Like, they're going to be coming after him. And how tough is that adjustment when he's got that knee? That we typically say it takes about a year and a half before mentally that knee injury is out of your mind.
I think the MVP point is a great one. Because who are the MVP? Cam, still trying to recapture his MVP form, and he never got hurt, right? Matt Ryan, I know he had a coordinator change, but he's still trying to recapture his MVP form. We've seen guys have amazing quarterback seasons. Derek Carr, we thought was en route to an MVP. Now, he did deal with an injury.
Right.
And so was that about the injury, or was that about him playing over his skis for a season? Now, I believe in Carson's draft profile. I believe in what I saw last year. I don't think last year was an outlier year for his talent and his ability. But I want to ask you a question because you have direct experience with this. We see so many teams get to a Super Bowl, win or lose it, and have enormous trouble, particularly at the beginning of the next year, at recapturing that sharpness, that form. The Patriots, while that hasn't been a tendency of them as of late, you talk all the time. The one year the Pats ever missed the playoffs with a healthy Tom Brady was the year after their first Super Bowl. You guys started that year great, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
And you had a swoon in the middle part of the season. What I don't see the same sharpness from the Philadelphia Eagles, and I can't put it on them not having their quarterback, because they didn't have their quarterback when they won the Super Bowl, particularly for them defensively. What is it about winning or getting to a Super Bowl that tends to follow you into the beginning of next year, and how do you fight it off?
Well, you probably didn't even start following the Eagles till midway through the season and really closely evaluating them. So they went through the whole early part of the season under the radar. When you're the defending Super Bowl champs, there's no under the radar. There's no under the radar in the preseason. Every single game, people are getting up for you. The expectations of your performance increase substantially. You've had a shorter offseason. You've had guys who are on the speaking tour. You've had guys who want contracts. You've had guys who feel like wrote books, all the success, all the things. You know, everybody wants a piece of that. And you forget that you don't get to show up the next year and start where you left off. You show up the next year with a clean slate, and you've got to go do all those things you did well better. And who's everybody studying? You. There's been a lot of time and effort and energy put into beating you. And
people don't respect what it takes to play quality football. It's not like baseball. It's not like hockey. It's not like the NBA. Even if you have the same people come back, the ability to be able to get all 11 people to move in sync, to be able to play quality football, you don't get a snapshot at the Super Bowl and then, oh, we take this right to training camp. No, when you got 30% of the roster changing, football changes, and the way they've changed the rules with less practice, you see more change in the beginning of the season because teams haven't practiced. They don't know what their identity is going to be. So you should expect that. That's why the NFL is the most popular. That's why 8 to 12 fan bases every season. When you start, man, everyone can win the Super Bowl because it is a reality.
All right, Coach, stick around. Coming up, is it panic time for Russell Wilson and the Seahawks? That's next on First Things First. Back here with Coach Mangini talking Bears and Seahawks. Bears defense was the story in this one. Khalil Mack had one of Chicago's six sacks on Russell Wilson, who couldn't stay upright at all. And Prince Amukamura took pick to the house. 24-17 Chicago, your final. Seattle now 0-2 on the year. Here is Seattle's quarterback, Russell Wilson.
Even on our successful, you know, some of our best years, it didn't always look great at the beginning, but it's how you finish and how we can turn it around and just play the next game. And we get to go back home and play in Seattle, and we're going to need the 12s a lot, and we're going to need that feeling, winning is a habit, and you got to get that feeling, and once you get the first one, it kind of hopefully rolls from there. And so, we're doing the right things in terms of how we're preparing, and I'll bet on the guys that we have, any time of the day.
Literally, his glass has been half full since birth. Yeah. At Russell Wilson. Coach, what do you think went wrong for the Seahawks last night?
It's like we talked about earlier. They talked all season about the running game. They talked about improving the running game. They talked about the importance of the running game. They drafted a running back in the first round, and then they're not running the ball on any kind of consistent basis. And that, to me, is a real problem. And even on the interception for a touchdown, okay, so they're running the ball fairly effectively the drive before that. Now they have a chance to go tie the game, and they get in empty. They get in empty, so they broadcast to the world, we are throwing the ball. So now Russell Wilson, who's been sacked 6 times, goes back. He's got a little bit of anxiousness to him because he's been hit so many times. And so he throws the hitch out wide, and the corner's squatting on it. It's not like he went back, saw that the corner was squatting on it, and then threw it. Or he just kind of threw it out there. And you can see the corner never moves on this play, and it's a pick six. There is so many good things happening for Seattle in the drive before because they ran the ball. And then to go to this, I just don't get it. I don't get it.
See, Russell's right that they have started off slow in the past. The story with Seattle, we talk about this with New England. The story with Seattle has been they get better. They stay alive in September. They find their legs in October, and you do not want to play them at the end of the year. That had been the story. And he's right, they've overcome it. But see, you made this point earlier, and I think it's the one that is most important for the Seattle Seahawks. They've never had this little talent. It's not even close. Like, whatever the second least talented Seahawks team is since Russell's been there, it is a big gap between them and this team. With Doug Baldwin out, who is their plus playmaker on offense that isn't Russell Wilson? And their best player on defense showed up days before the season in Earl Thomas. I mean, Bobby, I shouldn't leave Bobby Wagner out. I apologize. I always...
Well, the players who were available
right.
last night.
Exactly. Last night, but Wagner's not playing right now. So what do you do? Like, what you're doing right now is you're saying we got one of the 5 best quarterbacks in the league. We hope he can make enough happen. And to your point, Chicago's totally inept offense after the opening couple drives gave them a window. They gave them a chance. They were in that football game. The pick six obviously ended the football game.
Yeah, Russell, though, since 2016, there's only 4 quarterbacks throwing more interceptions than him on the road. So they haven't been a great team on the road. It's hard to be really, really good in the NFL. But Russell hasn't been at his best. So he can come up with more cliches, more coach speech, because no one says more things positive afterwards. He said, we got to finish better. The 12s, it's all about the 12s. That's the home crowd. He says, also, winning is a habit. And I like the way we're preparing. And if I was a betting man, I would bet on these guys in the locker room. So that's your normal. How does that help you win games, Russ? You got to stop turning the ball over. Interceptions, that was easy, a cover two. And because you get hit, then you don't start to believe what you see. They had 2 safeties in. The corners sank a little bit. They were in cover two. The reason why both corners, if you think Prince Mukamura jumped on it, you should see the other corner in the film. He was getting ready to rob it.
Oh, yeah.
All right?
Up
it's top. Cover two. Straight cover two, 4-3, 3 linebackers dropping in to take away the hooks and the curls, and these corners are going to rob the flat. So when you get hit a lot, it affects the quarterback, and that's what happens to Russell when the Seahawks go on the road.
Can you go ahead?
And they can help him with that. They can help him with that by not putting him in those positions over and over again. They've had 2 games. They've run the ball 30 times in those 2 games. Hey, keep handing the ball off. I know it's not the most exciting football, but it allows you to get to exciting football, and it doesn't create exciting plays for the defense. It wears down your opponent, and then you have opportunities that you don't have if you just tell the world, hey, we're going to throw the ball on this play.
This is something to watch in because, Coach, they did advertise this whole offseason based on the running game, trying to improve this offensive line to not be in a rebuilding stage but to build on the offensive line. Brian Schottenheimer is their offensive coordinator. If they stay disconnected, we talk about coaches being under heat. Watch how this works out. Because Russell Wilson, he's one of the franchise quarterbacks, and they'll start to try to blame Brian. I'm not blaming Brian, but this is how things happen in the National Football League. You say you want to do something all year. Are they supporting the offensive coordinator and what he wants to do, or do they get in the habit of where they were before? Let's spread it out. When you go against Von Miller and Khalil Mack in week number one, in week number two, and you come up with a game plan that you're going to throw the ball as much as they have, you're not trying to win that game.
And he's been sacked a dozen times. No other quarterback's been sacked more than 10 times. Like, he is once again under duress as much, if not more, than any player in the league.
Well, but in fairness, he also extends plays a long time. He tries to make something happen. It's not all the offensive line's fault. I mean, sometimes the quarterback has accountability, too, if you're running around as much as
agreed.
He does.
Agreed. Oh, sure. But if we're sometimes he runs himself into sacks. He also runs himself out of sacks. Like, I agree he extends plays. But sometimes, so maybe there's, of those 12 sacks, maybe three he caused. But I bet another three or four he prevented with that athleticism.
Or are the Bears better than people thought this year, especially with the addition of Mack?
Yeah, they create some problems defensively, and they were a good defense last year. Adding Khalil Mack as a whole nother element, and you've got to account for him, and that creates opportunities for other guys. Yes, I think that's an element of it, but they knew that going in. It wasn't like it suddenly snuck up on them. They saw the game last week. They saw the problems that the Bears could create, and to some degree they tried to minimize it by chipping Mack and doing things like that. They could have done more.
And they didn't just add Mack. We got to keep in mind, and Mack's a great player. But Roquan Smith, the story on him out of Georgia is whoever drafts him has an NFL-ready immediate linebacker. It's why he went in the top 10. Now, the contract dispute this offseason became the story with him. But they added a blue chipper in the draft and then arguably the best front seven defender in the entire league right before the season. Like, no, this defense is going to be excellent. Now, they got to take the training wheels off Trubisky a little bit. He can't be 32nd in the league in yards per attempt. Like, tier two, he started some last year. You took him second overall. They got him Allen Robinson. They got him Trey Burton. You got to see if he can throw the ball downfield some for the Bears to take that next step, because that defense is going to be consistent throughout the season.
Yeah, but you take those training wheels off, they better be able to balance
insurance
on that bike.
You better have some insurance.
10 and 2?
Because you're going to get a busted chin.
Yeah.
Right? Emergency care soon afterwards. Yeah.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.